It's a Mike Grimm Monday here on Kate Radio. Mike Grimm, of course, sports director, Minnesota News Network, and the voice of Golden Gopher Athletics. And he is our music expert on the show as well. Mike, a good afternoon. We got to get right to it. You were in Buffalo last week to watch an outdoor concert with groups that were rocking in the 80s and the 90s. You heard some intro music there from Poison. Give me the review. How was the show out there in Buffalo?
Yeah, it was real good. It was real good, Aaron. We had a great time. Yeah, we, my son, a buddy of mine and his son, we had a little father-son trip out to Buffalo. It was a great trip. Motley Crue, Poison, Def Leppard, and Joan Jett, they were on tour. In fact, they were in Minneapolis on Sunday, but we thought, you know what, let's go do a trip and do it outdoors. You know, not, I mean, U.S. Bank is indoors, so we did. Although after going last week, I was really tempted to go again on Sunday last night. I actually went as far as looking and to see if I could find a cheap ticket because I blew my budget last week. Let's put it that way. So
gotcha, yeah.
We had a really good time. I thought all four groups were great. Played good. The crowd was great. It was full. It was at the Buffalo Bills Stadium. So yeah, it was an outdoor stadium. I don't know. It had to be 50,000 people, I suppose. It was a real fun time. Then we did other stuff too, which was fun. The, you know, some of the tourist things to do in Buffalo. We were down, you know, by the canal. Which was kind of cool. Some cool restaurant areas there. Obviously went to the Anchor Bar, the place that invented the Buffalo Wing. And
that's right.
I think we were there 2.5 days, and I think I took in 27 wings over the course of different stops at different wing places. And so, yeah, I mean, it was just a fun trip. And of course, you know, we on Thursdays, the concert was Wednesday, Thursday, we went to Niagara Falls, because it's close, right? And yeah. And I'll be so here's the deal. This is honest truth about Niagara Falls. I have never been there. I've been to Buffalo once, but that was 20 some years ago. I was covering a Rams Bills game when the Rams were still in St. Louis. So it was fun to get back out there. And Niagara Falls is what, a half hour, and we thought, let's go. But I had heard from some other people who've been there, like, yeah, it's okay, it's fine. No big deal. And so we went, and man, I'm telling you, I was blown away. I thought it was amazing.
Isn't it awesome? Oh, I love it. I thought it was great.
The kids liked it. We ended up going on that little boat thing that takes you right up to the edge of the thing.
Oh,
almost.
Oh, cool.
It was great. Yeah, my expectations were far surpassed with that part of the trip. I thought it was amazing. I don't know. I just remember having people say, yeah, we went and it was fine. No big deal. And I would not classify that as that kind of a visit. I thought it was an amazing thing. I couldn't believe how big they were, the power that the thing has. You know, and there's a couple of different waterfalls there. So we had it turned out that was a real cool highlight of the trip as well. So we had a fun time.
Now, whoever told you that Niagara Falls was A or okay, I don't want to go on a trip with them, Mike. I'll be honest with
you.
Because
right,
I think
right,
Niagara Falls
right.
is cool. The Canadian side is kind of the tourist side, kind of like the Wisconsin Dells on the Canadian side, and the American side is more national or state park-like, so you get experience, you know, both sides of the falls in two different ways. So, yeah, no, that is awesome. I got to ask you, out of the four groups that performed, and you said everybody was good, if you had to pick your favorite, which one would you pick?
Man, that's a tough one because I did have expectations going in of certain things. Like I knew that Vince Neil, the lead singer of Motley Crue, you know, he does not have the 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Maybe he once did. We all, you know, that I knew. That said, I thought he was pretty good. The music was great. Like you know, the guitar, the drums, that stuff was amazing. And look, I get it. A lot of people try not their cup of tea, but if you're in, I think you're in that camp as well that would put in a Motley Crue CD. And I say CD because, you know, we're people of the 80s and 90s.
Correct. Yeah.
I didn't go as far back as saying a cassette, which is actually how I first started listening to Motley Crue. But if you like that music, the music was really good. Vince was okay, but that part exceeded what I thought. I mean, he wasn't, you know, it didn't sound like you were listening to the record, but you don't want that anyway. Right.
Correct. Yeah.
Poison was amazing. I think Bret Michaels is a great front man, great, just a likable guy, right? It was just great. They only played about seven songs, Poison, but they were the seven you'd want. And Joan Jett was really good. And then Def Leppard was like nearly flawless. Like it almost did sound like the album. I was impressed. They actually on that night, they've been alternating, I guess, in terms of the headliner or the closing band, Motley Crue and Def Leppard back and forth. And so Def Leppard finished the concert and they were really good. And there's something to be said about finishing when it's dark out, you know, at an outdoor concert. And so that part of it, because they have the big computer screens with the computer generated images that go with, you know, synchronized with the music. So that part was really cool. But I would say this, if I only could pick two.
Oh, you got to pick one, Mike. You got to pick one.
I would pick Motley Crue then, just because okay. the music was there. I mean, I thought Def Leppard probably performed the best. And the one thing about Def Leppard is I'll be honest, I was not, I like Def Leppard, but I wasn't like a diehard Def Leppard fan. I thought they were really, really good. And the thing about their music is it's really stood the test of time. They played 19 songs and you knew them all. And it was a nice long concert and they're old guys. You know, and they worked hard. The Joe Elliott, their singer, was great. And their music really plays well live, which was cool, right? I mean, that, you know, there are some bands that, you know, maybe are almost too mellow live. That this was not them. That said, I'm just a bigger fan of the other two bands. I wish Poison would have played more than seven songs. You know, there's some others that I would have liked to hear, but the ones they played, we knew. And Michaels, Bret Michaels was a great showman. But those are the two. Like if somebody said, hey, you had to leave early and you had to miss one of the bands, I guess I would say Def Leppard, but man, you're missing a really good show. I mean, it was a really good show. So, it was hard. I mean, I thought it was all good. And Joan Jett was really good. I mean, you know, she has not as many hits, obviously has a big name and, you know, three or four of the songs everybody knows. And then there was three or four that you weren't really sure about. But she did a nice job. She was the opener. It was, you know, because there's so many bands, it started at 4:30. So it's bright daylight when it started and she got it going for sure. So it was a pretty good show.
Mike Grimm on a Mike Grimm Monday here on Kaint Radio. And Mike, let's talk about yesterday's preseason game for the Minnesota Vikings. And I'll be honest with you, I did not watch one snap of the game. I was busy doing other things. Did you get a chance to watch any of the preseason opener against the Raiders?
I watched until I fell asleep. So not only did I go to the concert last week, and that was a 3-day trip, I ended up in Iowa at a wedding. I'm at the age now that my son's friends are starting to get married. And this is a young man that I coached in baseball coming up through. And so he got married down in Sioux City. And so I spent, a couple of days in Iowa after the concert for the wedding. It was a great wedding. Fun. Kind of makes you feel old when your son's friends are starting to get married. Right. So I was tired. So I watched a few series and the next thing I know, I woke up and it was the fourth quarter. Obviously I did some reading and about it since. And, it seems to me it was a fine first preseason game. You know, the Raiders had already played their one preseason game. So they kind of got some of those kinks out. You know, the Vikings, I did watch the part where like it seemed in that first drive about, you know, every time they made a third down stop, the refs threw a flag on a hold or an illegal contact in the secondary. So if they worked that out a little bit defensively. So, yeah, I thought it was just a general preseason game, take what you will from it. But I didn't see any disastrous things that would indicate, oh, this team's going to be, 3-17 or whatever. It would be 3-14 or whatever.
You know, when it comes to the preseason, I mean, my opinion is the biggest story, and we know guys are still fighting for spots to make the final roster for opening day. I mean, the biggest story has got to be maybe the backup quarterback, and especially a Kellen Mond, who was the third-round pick by the Vikings a few years ago, because I think Vikings fans are excited about him or were excited about him when he got drafted, because he's kind of that scrambling quarterback that many teams have nowadays. And to me, he threw a couple of touchdown passes. I saw that. Sean Mannion threw a touchdown pass. But for me, that's kind of the biggest story in the preseason games, is who's going to be number two, and is Kellen Mond a guy that could be the backup quarterback, the number two quarterback, and a guy that could possibly take over for Kirk Cousins once his era is over?
Yeah, I don't think any of those questions were answered yesterday. But yeah, I agree. I mean, that's one of the intriguing things. I will say this. I this is just me personally. I know a lot of people are really worried about the backup quarterback spot. Like, oh, what are they going to do if Kirk Cousins gets hurt? And my answer to that is they're going to do what almost every other NFL team that doesn't have Kurt Warner, or maybe Case Keenum, who when Sam Bradford got hurt, came out of nowhere. But they're going to do what basically every other team does when their starting quarterback gets hurt for a long extended period of time, and that is they're going to stink. And
yeah.
It doesn't matter. I mean, there's already, right? I mean, there's already 14 teams that want a quarterback that aren't even happy with their starter. Where are you going to find a backup? You know, where are you going to find a backup that's willing to come in and be a backup that's just going to sit there on the hopes that Kirk Cousins, who rarely misses a game, if ever, unless he gets COVID, is gonna you know, look, if Kirk Cousins goes down, they're gonna stink. It's just that simple, and that's the way it is. You know, Ben Roethlisberger has now two of the last 4 years missed most of a season, and the Steelers were no good when he was out, and when he played, they were good. Aaron Rodgers got his season in an injury when Anthony Barr leveled him, and they stunk. And you know, outside, I'm trying to think. You know, Kurt Warner, you know, way back in '99, Trent Green went down, and the Rams weren't even supposed to be good with Trent Green. And, you know, how little did they know that Kurt Warner was going to be a Hall of Famer and lead him to the Super Bowl. You know, Keenum was kind of a wild card, you know, almost literally, right, with what he did when Bradford went down. And that team was pretty good on defense and, had a right mix and played good football. But outside of that, I can't get worked up about it other than to say, who's out there? I mean, there's a dozen teams right now that want a starting quarterback. They don't even have a backup, you know, that because I hear and see and watch people talk and worry and fret and, oh, what are they going to do? This is a playoff team, we hope. And if Kirk Cousins goes down, what are they going to do? They got to have a backup that can lead with the playoffs. Well, no, nobody does almost. Like almost nobody has that. So it is what it is. And if Cousins goes down, you're going to stink. And that's what we'll probably have to live with. You know, I don't know how you can waste too much energy with it, quite honestly. That said, to me, the intriguing thing is, okay, what happens? Do they think Mond or Mannion is a guy that can even be serviceable? Because I don't think Mannion probably is. I think he has done, when he's gotten his chances, he hasn't been very good the last couple of years, right? So will they look for somebody else that they feel could give them a better shot if Cousins goes down, I suppose. And is, as you say, Mond a guy that could eventually be a starter? Well, is he into year three now, or this is year two? Year two, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. I think he was a rookie last year. So, could he be that guy? I will say this. I thought he looked way better in the plays I saw yesterday, just in diagnosing the defense and finding the guy. And, you know, it seemed to me last year, one, he didn't get much of a chance, right? I mean, it seemed to me that Zimmer and those guys had basically said, this guy can't play. And he, even in the preseason, he didn't play much. So last night was his first real extended time. Now, when he did play last year, he was no good. And so last night he had a couple of nice throws. He had a fourth down conversion, got a couple of touchdowns. It would have been fun to see if the defense could have gotten him the ball back to see if he could take him down and win the game. So I don't know if he's that guy. I think it's probably way too early. And if I had to lay money, I would say he probably isn't going to be the heir apparent to Cousins. But that doesn't mean he can't be the backup, because either way, if Cousins goes down, I think the team's just not going to be, you know, it isn't worth worrying about at that point. It's just a lost season, as other teams have had, right? I remember Tom Brady went down to the Patriots, and that's what kind of made Matt Cassel, right? And Cassel came back and ended up being a starter, well, with the Vikings for a time, but with the Chiefs for a while after that. He led the Patriots to the playoffs that year when Brady went down, but not the Super Bowl. And remember, the Patriots had, you know, pretty elite defenses back then as well. So you know, there are some, but you know, like even at, let's say Kansas City, Pat Mahomes goes down. Who was the backup to play last year late? I forget the guy's name.
He's I have no idea.
And he, you know, they weren't very good. You know, it just is what it is. There aren't enough good quarterbacks just to stockpile a backup that's going to take you to the playoffs. Now, maybe you luck into one. Maybe you find one. Maybe Kellen Mond becomes great. I don't know. But I just can't understand the angst with which I see this question being asked day after day after day. It just isn't worth it. You're going to stink if he gets hurt, and live with it and move on, I think, it would be my answer to it, you know?
Sports director, Minnesota News Network, voice of Golden Gopher Athletics, Mike Grimm on a Mike Grimm Monday. And Mike, let's talk about the Gophers. We are just over a couple of weeks away from their opener. And I got to get your thoughts on this because I saw some stories last week. I like Jerry Kill. I like the former coach, but what in the world continues to go on between him and PJ Fleck? Now, I saw a story about, you know, when Tracy Clays got let go by the Gophers, and that was a Jerry Kill guy. There were some really hard feelings that Tracy Clays has maybe never got over being a let go by the Gophers. And again, he's a Jerry Kill guy. But what in the world is this feud in your thought? And I mean, it makes for a great storyline going into that opener against New Mexico State, even though it kind of takes away from the guys on the field. It's kind of Kill versus Fleck on opening night. But what are your thoughts on the, I don't know, the drama or the saga going on between these two?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's too bad because, when Jerry Kill got here, the situation was not great coming off the Tim Brewster era and the regime there. And he got the program back to being respected. He got the program some credibility back. He got them winning, you know, and going to bowl games on a regular basis. They won 8 games a couple of times with Jerry. Got him back to a New Year's bowl game for the first time in a while. And then when he retired, and we thought that was it for him, walked off into the sunset, and a very emotional day in 2015. It was on my birthday in October of 2015 when he had that very emotional news conference to announce that his health would not let him continue, and Tracy would take over as interim coach. And then Tracy got the permanent job for 2016 and won 9 games. And most of the time that would, he did sign the permanent extension, but then all that stuff went haywire with the Title IX investigation and the boycott of the bowl game and all that kind of, you know, and then the public support of it from Tracy, all that kind of led to some real issues nationally in terms of, you know, sour publicity and then everything else. And so the administration chose to move on both at the president's level and at the athletic director level. And so Jerry took issue with his guy, Tracy Clays, getting fired. And yeah, there's so much to it. I don't want to get into too much. And I think so that was the start of it. Obviously that's Tracy is Jerry's guy. And Jerry did not like that his guy got fired at the school after winning 9 games. But you also have to look at it from the overall perspective and, in my opinion, look at it and say, if you can't understand why that happened, given the situation, then you probably aren't looking at it through, you know, completely unbiased glasses. And he shouldn't,
true,
right?
True,
Tracy,
yep,
was with him for 23 years or whatever. And then there was much talk when PJ came in. If you go back, this is the one thing that does kind of grind my gears about the whole thing. PJ in his very first introductory news conference, because remember, he was an assistant with those guys at Northern Illinois for a couple of years, proclaimed he goes, I'm a Jerry Kill guy. Jerry taught me how to treat players. Jerry taught me this. Jerry taught me that. And then PJ also in that news conference said that they were going to change the culture. And Jerry took that to mean PJ was inferring that the culture before was no good. Well, first of all, your coach doesn't get fired after 9 wins if there's not anything wrong, right?
True.
The aforementioned stuff that I mentioned was a factor. Now, was that an overall cultural thing or an incident, isolated incident? I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, I don't think, I still maintain, I don't think that PJ meant it to be, well, the culture that we walked into is horrible. If you listen to PJ almost all the time, he qualifies that by saying, we're going to, you know, we got to change the culture, whatever. And then he always says, our culture, it doesn't mean ours is better, doesn't mean ours is worse. just means we're a different culture. And anyone who has been around that knows, right, that there's no question PJ's culture is different than most everybody else's. And could use the term, whatever, process culture, you know, whatever the term is. So I think there was some misunderstanding there. I think there were some hurt feelings. I think also Jerry was hurt because PJ was on a previous staff that at Northern Illinois with them, that PJ didn't keep any of the assistants, but that never happens. You know that, right?
I mean, oh, absolutely.
You know, Jerry didn't keep any of the Tim Brewster staff on board when he came here, and nor would he. So anyway, it just, you know, so it's too bad, because if Jerry had just taken the high road, this game we would have a lot of fun with having him come back. And people, you know, when you're a fan of a program, you're usually rooting for the current coach, right? And so this makes it really difficult, and it fragments the fan base and it fragments supporters. And you know, I'm still friends with guys who played for Jerry Kill, and it's sometimes hard for them to go cheer for PJ Fleck because they don't want to upset Jerry, and that's stupid. That's just dumb, right?
Correct.
And PJ, I think, would welcome all those guys coming into practice and watching, and I think they'd like to go. But I think they feel like if they show up and tweet out that they're at practice, that those guys from that other staff are going to say, what are you doing? You're turning your back on us. And that shouldn't be the way it is. And that's kind of that cultural sustainability that PJ's talked about a lot, is that, you know, you want to be there for a long time so that culture meshes and most everyone's on the same page. Look, when you're running through 100 guys every year, there's going to be hiccups. Every school has hiccups. Guys transfer from Alabama and badmouth Nick Saban. You know, Wisconsin's had, you know, they had what, 7 transfers last year. Iowa had its issues with their strength coach. You know, so stuff happens. So it doesn't matter. You can be a really good team and a really good person and a really good coach and well-intentioned, and still weird things can happen. And so certainly PJ is not perfect, as is not any other coach, but it's just too bad that those two guys, given their start together on the same staff when PJ first got into coaching with Jerry, it's too bad they can't get on the same page, because this game could have been a fun little reunion. They could have talked it up. Jerry would have been thought of in a high regard, and that just, none of that's going to happen because of kind of how this is all unfolded.
Mike Grimm Monday here on Kate Radio. And Mike, really quick before we let you go, we got to talk briefly about the Twins, who just like that find themselves 2.5 games back of Cleveland in the American League Central. Probably should have took 2 or 3 from the Angels, but the new closer Lopez blew a save. For some reason, they still allow Pagan the pitch, even though, I mean, he's consistently, I mean, let's just be honest, he's consistently bad. I mean, he's just consistently bad, and they keep throwing him out there. And now the Twins, again, find themselves, like I mentioned, 2.5 games back. And, I mean, they got to find a way to get some kind of, you know, streak or better momentum going, because Cleveland's playing good. Cleveland's got a good pitching staff, and the Guardians, I think, are a good enough team that they could create some distance here really quick if the teams behind them don't start playing some better baseball.
Yeah, now the Twins are tied with the White Sox for second place, and this is their biggest, right? Two and a half games, that's their biggest deficit. Since they took the lead, they took the lead in the division win, and like, I mean, they were terrible early. Weren't the Twins like 4-8? But, you know, once they got going, they went on that, I think they won 11 or 12 or something in April or May and got into first place. And then I think, was it early July that they were out a game or two when Cleveland came in and inexplicably won all those late games where the bullpen blew it. And so now, yeah, you're right, 2.5 out, biggest deficit. They haven't played great. And really now offense has been the issue. Like they, you know, they got the home run in the first inning yesterday and then didn't score another run. They had all kinds of opportunities. Like Lopez blowing the save is no good. That stinks. He traded the guy so that he would close those kind of games out. And that was kind of a freak, seemed to me kind of a freak inning, like just a bloop here, a hard hit ball there. And the next thing you know, it's like, how did this happen? We're going to extras. So it wasn't like a total meltdown. And that happens. The best closers will blow those saves. But that game should have been 8-2 at that point, you know, not 3-2 or 4-2. I forget exactly what it was. You know, they left 14 runners on base, or they were 0-14 or something with runners in scoring position, and that just can't happen. And, you know, Carlos Correa is really struggling. Max Kepler can't even put the barrel of the bat on the ball. He's like on an 0-27. He's at the point where you almost have to sit him. he was in some important spots yesterday and just couldn't pull through with anything. So offense is the issue. And now I think that this is their moment. They have 16 of the next 19 at home. The Royals are now, that said, they're catching the Royals at a point. I think Kansas City's like 4-2 in their last six. They just beat the Dodgers. They snapped their whatever they had, where they were 13 or 14 game winning streak that LA had. They snapped that yesterday. So the Royals come to town. Then they go to Houston, I think. And Houston obviously is the second best team in the American League. Or do they have a better record than the Yankees now? I'm not sure, but they're
not
really
sure.
Good.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're like 25 or 30 over 500. So that's going to be a tough game there. But then they have I think it's 10 straight at home, and they got, I think, the Texas Rangers in there. They're not very good. So you hope to make some hay in that grouping, right? In that, and you hope, and I don't know, I haven't looked that closely at the schedule. You hope Cleveland's playing the Yankees and the Astros and the Dodgers, and you can gain ground and then get past them. But right now, if they can't get some of these guys that they're paying, you know, to hit, and their problem right now is they've really fallen into, like, if they're not hitting a home run, they really struggle scoring. They can't seem to string a bunch of hits together. You know, that's a thing about Houston and the Dodgers. Now, they hit home runs, make no mistake, but you watch it, those guys play, and all of a sudden it's like a six-hit inning, and they put four on the board. And those old rallies that, you know, that's how baseball used to be funneled. You know, that's how they would, that's how you'd score. You'd have a double, a single, a walk, and then, you know, someone find a gap, and you got three. And now everyone just waits for the home run. And I think the Twins have fallen into that a little bit, you know, that just a single. And if you don't get anything else, there's just, you know, you look at the batting averages in that Twins lineup, and even Buxton, who's got like 28 homers, is hitting .215. I think Polanco's in the .220s. Correa's dipped down. I think he's what, .250 something now. Max Kepler, like I said, is in a horrific slump. I mean, there's just not enough good hitting guys to get on base enough to string these rallies together. So, Sanchez is around 200. Sandy Leon, who's now almost become the everyday catcher, he's hitting like 180. And that's hard. It's hard to score runs with that. So hopefully they can start getting hot, but or face some competition where they're just going to, you know, string some runs together. But I can't say that I'm overly optimistic. It's kind of gone in cycles, right? The bullpen had its rough stretch. The starters had their rough stretch in June. And now the offense is having its rough stretch. And, you know, if they can put it all together, and you and I have talked about this almost weekly, you just got to get in, because there have been teams that you know, thought there was no chance to winning as recently as last year. At this time, nobody thought the Atlanta Braves would be the guys wearing the rings. So you just never know. what was the former Twins name we talked about a couple weeks ago that they traded for? He played left field for the Twins and then went to the Indians. And his name's escaping me now, but he was the guy that basically helped carry the Braves to the World Series last year.
Oh, Rosario.
Rosario,
yes.
Rosario was hitting like .210 for the Indians. Nobody, you know, wasn't playing, so they traded him. Just, hey, we got a left-handed bat, and then the guy hit like 10 home runs in a month. And true. Or whatever it was, you know. So if somebody for the Twins all of a sudden gets hot like that, you never know. But right now, I can't place a great deal of confidence that this group's going to put it all together and make the postseason.
Mike,
unfortunately.
Mike, I love your theory, because nobody thinks the White Sox are going to win the World Series. So I'm going to go with your theory. I like your theory.
There you are.
I like
there
it
you
a
are.
Lot. Mike, yes, Grimm, sir. Sports Director, Minnesota News Network, voice of Golden Gopher Athletics, joins us every Monday. Mike, thank you so much for the time. Have you a great week, and we'll chat again next week.
Look forward to it, Aaron. Thank you.